Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story, we break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here he comes. Here's a man.
Division title.
Here comes down.
Oh, there he is. All right.
There he is. Oh, baby. Oh, my God. I got to say hello to my guy here.
He's looking good. All right, there you go. So we'll have Daryl Strawberry here coming up in moments. Straw on the Fan live at Amazing Day here at Citi Field. We've been talking a lot. Look at Joe and Straw embracing right there. Daryl, how are you? Sal Licata, good to see you, man. Good to see you. Good luck with everything. All right. Yeah, all right, you can put on that headset right there.
Yeah,
all right, Joe, we're on the air here, Joe. You can see him. Maybe sign the ball after.
Hold on.
Strong. That is right.
With my guy here.
That headset for you. This one right there, Strong.
Even though I got...
Look at it. What ring you got there, Daryl? That's not one of those Yankee
that
ones,
was,
right?
No. That was a gift. Gift of retirement.
Oh, okay.
Mets, 19...
Oh, look at that. That's
what
sick. The 18.
Oh, wow. That's for the retirement number?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was
he's got one of those other ones from 86.
No, I'm just making sure. There you go.
You got to say, even though I have more, I got to tell you this, Daryl, okay? I got a basement downstairs where I got all my stuff. I don't call it a man cave because I like to have women in the cave.
Oh, know? My God.
Okay? So I don't want to. I hate that.
So you're a true lover.
I like to have my wife down in the cave. You know what I'm saying? So I don't like that word, that stuff, man cave. There, downstairs, I got so much stuff. I have more of you than anybody else. I just want to let you know.
I know. I mean, you've been a dear friend. So thank you for many years.
I love you, man.
Same here.
Now, how did you two meet? Was this when you were playing Daryl and he was ripping you on the radio? Or when
I never ripped him.
Even if he did, it was in a good way.
Yeah.
There was a reason behind it.
I never ripped you.
But I love that. Yeah, I love the fact, there are certain people that's in the media that were very special, and he's one of those guys that you just kind of know that he's real. Don't sugarcoat it and everything. He tell you like it is. And, the biggest mistake I ever made was leaving Queens. And I know that for a fact, and Joe knows that.
Oh, please.
Fact,
I cried. I can't tell you how many days I cried. I saw you in that damn Dodger uniform.
But it's like when you don't have an option. When you don't have an option,
right.
I didn't have an option with the team when I became a free agent. And they told me, okay, if you want to have a good year, you go out and that year
and
have a good year. And I did.
Yeah.
And then they said, go test the water, and I did.
I think you went 37-104 that year.
Yes.
Just to let you know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You remember more than I do, right?
Yeah, that's right. 37-104. But yeah. I got to tell you, Frank Cashin, who I have no love for, okay?
No, Frank was great. Don't do that to Frank.
But you weren't a $5 million a year ball player. Come on, Dad.
Yeah, I know. But they went and got somebody else, but that's okay. That's
right.
The way it goes.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Somebody else was Vince Coleman.
And that wasn't on you.
Somebody else. Vince Coleman.
That wasn't on you at all, Daryl, wanting to play with Eric Davis in Los Angeles?
No, that really was not on me. That was really on, going out and having that last season and them telling me, well, put up a good year and we'll offer you a deal. And they offered me a 3-year deal, which was, really not talked about much. And then we didn't say much about it. And I just went out there and L.A. was like there and wanted to give me a 5-year deal. So that's when I made a decision. And looking back, all money's not good money. For players, sometimes they think in that free agency market, it's your legacy that you really want to leave with organization that you played for. When I played here and grew up in this organization, there were so many great young players coming through the minor league system, and we were all developed the right way. So that's why I said Frank did a great job. He did a great job of building our minor league system and bringing players like myself and Doc and Lenny, then Elster. You go
right.
You can go on and on about so many different players. Kevin Mitchell came out of the organization. So many guys.
The Hernandez trade.
Hernandez trade. Yeah. Hernandez and Darling, and then we got Carter. When we got Carter, that's when we realized that we were going to be a team to beat. You got to remember, you had to win the division back then. There was no wild cards.
Right.
Had it been wild cards, because we lost in Lost in 85 to the Cardinals. We won 98 games.
Yep.
And we ended up second and had to go home. And there was a bitter taste in our mouth after that last series in St. Louis. And we sat in that locker room after losing to them. And we realized going into 86 that we was never going to let anybody beat us like that again. We just wasn't going to have that feeling inside where we were just going to let a team that we knew we should beat beat us like that. And we came into 86 and we had that first meeting in 86 in spring training, and Davey said we're going to win it all. We just kind of all looked around and thought to ourselves, yeah, well, that's right, we're going to win it all this year. And we got off to a 2-3, 2-4, and the media was saying, yeah, they're going to win it all. And we went on the road and we took off and it was over.
For me, Darryl, Joe B and Sal live here at Amazing Day talking with Darryl Strawberry as a young kid at the time, 7 years old in 86. I feel great coming to this ballpark, looking up, seeing 16 and 18 up there forever now. How does it make you feel, Darryl Strawberry? You come in a Citi Field and you see your number 18 immortalized forever.
Well, I think it makes you appreciate the fact what you accomplished here. And this is a very difficult place to play. But you cannot let the outside noise get to you. And I think that's what players miss about playing here. I always tell players, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it when you ask about playing in New York, because the fans are going to let you know. They're going to let you have it when you don't play well, and they're going to be all on top of you. They're going to be there early, and they ain't going to never leave the ballpark. And that's the difference of playing here. And when you see that, and you know, you realize that you were a big part of what was special in those years. Those years coming to the ballpark at Shea Stadium was unbelievable. It was unbelievable to play in front of the fans like we had. Had it not been for our fans, we wouldn't have been as good as players. Had it not been for our fans. And that's what makes the players. And I think players have to realize that when you play in a place like this, the expectations are going to be high. Can you live up to those expectations? And I think we did. I think most people in this young generation have no idea how good me and Doc was. And I was 24 when we won in 86. Most people have never seen how good Doc was when he was like 20,
right,
when he won the Cy Young.
I
used to think it was so boring to go out there and play, because he never let nobody get no hits. He just never got you in action.
Right.
It was just unbelievable, you know, to see a kid that good that has that kind of poise and that kind of command where he can pitch against major league hitters. I remember guys would come to the ballpark and take BP, real solid players, and that were in the lineup, and you know, they knew Doc was pitching, and it was like, oh, my neck hurt or my back hurt. They get out of that lineup because they didn't want those, you know, four punch outs, three punch outs that he was going to give you that night. And you remember the little crowd and then the guy up there with the
K-Corners.
Oh, man, it was just like exciting, man. The ballpark was just exciting to be in and come to. And just the team all around, our team, the guys had a lot of guts. Guys cared. You know, guys wasn't afraid to fail. Failure is a part of everything. But if you allow yourself to stay stuck on failure, you're never going to succeed. And I think that's why we ended up being so good, because we knew that we were going to have some failures, but we knew at the other end of it, we were going to kick you behind.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line with us. We wasn't playing around. It wasn't no if, when. It was just a matter of time. You know, because like that year in 86 when teams jumped out in front of us, they like get four or five runs on us in the first couple of innings, and they over there high five, and we sitting over there in the dugout, we thinking we gonna kill these guys,
right
we gonna come back and win this ball game. And majority of the time, that's what we did.
No doubt. We're talking to the great Darryl Strawberry, and I'll tell you this, 1983, when you came up, nobody had more pressure on him than you did. I mean, you know, you ballyhooed this the black Ted Williams, and I mean, we heard all of that kind of thing. You would never you didn't even know. I remember I'm watching the documentary. You didn't even know where New York was, okay, coming from L.A. Now here you are in the top media market in the world. You talked about what the fans are, and you excelled. You excelled right away, Darryl.
Well, I love the pressure. I love the craziness. I loved everything about it. And that's what baseball is really all about when you're playing at the highest level. And this is the greatest place to play. I don't care what anybody say. You can play anywhere else. It's not like this. I played everywhere. I've been to every stadium. I've seen every fan base, but I've never seen one like this one. You know, when I played for the 8 seasons I played here, I've never seen anything like it. They were crazy about us, and they thought we were like the Beatles or something, you know, back in those days. And people really don't know that. Only the older generation know that, because they were the one coming to the ballpark, and they were really putting us in a situation to believe in ourselves to win. And had it not been for, you know, Frank putting the team together like he put the team together, like when Keith came over, then you got Carter, you got Knight, right. You got so many other pieces that brought everything together for us with our young players. You see, you got to blend your young players in with some veteran players to be able to have a longevity of success. Because we were year after year, because we had all these guys coming from the farm system that we developed, and they were pretty good players. Greg Jeffries was a good player. I don't care what nobody says.
Yeah, Joe was trying to rip him before. I loved him.
I mean, you know, he wasn't as good as he should have been.
It's a big difference playing in New York. He was a good player.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of guys got on him early. You know, he wanted special kind of treatments, but he has some talent, and he can play. He came out of that farm system just like all the rest of us, and so many other guys that came through that farm system that was really good players. And when you put that with some veteran players, you're going to be very successful. So I was always successful. We were always in the pennant race all those years I was in because I was more of a veteran player later, but we had this younger group. See, 1988 was a more talented team.
Very painful year, by the way.
Yeah, very painful losing to the Dodgers. 1988 was a more talented team than the 86, but the 86 had more guts. You know, it was a big difference in, you know, the 86 team, because you didn't want to mess with us because we did everything. You know, it was just a different type of group of guys, and we had a lot of guts, you know, about who we were. You were going to respect us. You were going to come in our ballpark, and you were going to respect us. And that's just the way it was. Because everybody was looking at us, and they thought, well, you know, these guys think they're all that. And we were all that. And we knew that after losing in 85. So 88 was a year where we should have never lost to the Dodgers. I mean, I've never gotten over that, losing that series there. And I always said to myself, it was a pain. You know, Gibson hits home run, you know, from McDowell, makes a play. You know, just certain little things happen for him and went their way. You know, when things happen in the game of baseball and go your way, you got a better chance of winning in a short series like that.
Yeah.
Darryl, I'm sorry, Joe.
No, I'm just saying that was the 88 loss was the worst for me ever as a Met fan.
A lot of the younger fans, not only do they not know what you did back in your prime, but they also don't know that the Mets did once own this town. You lived it. You guys owned it in the 80s. It was the Mets. Then you are, of course, part of the Yankee dynasty later, but whatever. You were here when the Mets owned this town. Do you think the way now that the Cohens have taken over ownership and you know, go get Juan Soto where the Mets are at, do you think we could ever get back to what you experienced with the Mets in the 80s running this town?
I think they own their way. You know, I think they have a lot of talent, you know. Went to spring training last year. I'm going to go down spring training this year with them. They got a lot of young talent that's going to be coming up and everything, and that's what's going to make the difference of are they on their way, because that's really what's important. That's, you know, the longevity of your franchise, and I think they're headed in that direction, because if you have these younger players, you develop them, they can be what the Atlanta Braves are. Baseball is about young players now. It's about having, like I said, you got to blend it in. Yes, they have a chance to be that. You know, now that they're putting some pieces together, you know, Lindor, Soto, they got.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Those, you know, hopefully, you know, Alonso comes back, you know, and be a big part of what they're doing and going forward, and put your young players in there and let them be successful while you have your veteran players that know how to play that will carry the team. And then that will develop what they're looking for. You got to develop if you want to be great. You know, in baseball, for That's why the Atlanta Braves are so good, because they developed. They got young players, and they developed the young players. They put them all in the big leagues, let them learn in the big leagues and get some hard knocks. But now they become great players because you've been here and you got the experience.
Talking to the great Darryl Strawberry, Beningo and Licata live at an amazing day here at Citi Field. The home runs, you know, I've gone through the litany of the home runs. I mean, you know, Sal, the home runs this guy hit.
I remember.
The one off the clock in St. Louis, which was just unbelievable. He hit the roof in Montreal in 1988. No, I mean, it's unbelievable. The home run you hit off Nolan, which really, to me, of all the home runs you hit, there's two that stick out more than any other, okay? And that's the two you hit in the series against the Astros. The one off Nepa, when you guys were down, I think you were down 4-1 or whatever it is, you hit that three-run home run off Nepa, right? And then the one you hit off Ryan, off the auxiliary scoreboard down the right field line in Game 5, when Ryan and Doc were dealing, man.
Right.
That was like, I mean, it was unbelievable. Nobody was touching anybody, and I think we were losing 1-0, and he hits this laser beam freaking home run off the auxiliary scoreboard in right field. There was nothing like the Strawberry home runs.
Well, those big home runs in that situation. You know, I was like more of like a situation player that loved to thrive in those big situations. I never faded away from those. And I think that's the most important thing. I always looked at it in playoff baseball. You're going to get two good pitchers. One of them I got to hit. You know, Nolan was dealing.
Yep.
There was no way we were going to beat him. He was throwing a one-run shutout. And I think Marty Noble came over to me after the game. And he said, I went to Nolan Ryan and said, how did Strawberry hit that home run off you? And he said, well, his talent beat my talent. That's what Nolan, Marty Noble told me that Nolan said to him. So I beat him in that situation. That was a situation where I kept that ball fair. We tied that game up. We go on to win that game. Nepper, you know, threw me a pitch. You know, kept telling me keep my shoulder in.
Yep.
Don't fade off of it. And, you know, I hit a big three-run homer, and we tie that, and we go on to win that ball game. So, you know, playoff baseball is just those moments. You know, you can't pressure yourself. You got to remember, you're still a baseball player. You know, they may beat you this time, that time, but you may come up in a crucial situation and you may be able to get that one pitch and get that one big hit that can change the game for your team. And that's what I was able to do in those situations with them, you know, against especially a guy like Nolan, because he had probably like 10, 12 punch outs, I think, that game. Yeah. Him and Doc was dealing that
they
game.
They were dealing, yeah, man.
Is there one that you look back on, Game 7, obviously World Series, is there one that you look back on that, and you've had a lot of them to Joe's point, even with the Yankees, is there one moment that you had on the field that sticks with you in retirement?
I just think all the moments. I think the greatest moment was, you know, being a player and watching baseball your whole life and then being able to be in a situation where we came in 1986 to clinch, and I think we went down to Philly and we lost three.
Yeah, yes.
Then we went to St. Louis and we lost three.
Yeah. You had like a 20-something game lead in the division.
Yeah, we had a 20-game lead in the division. We wasn't worried about it, but then we came back home.
Right.
And we played at home, and we won the game at home, the dark pitch, and the fans got an opportunity to celebrate with us. They got an opportunity to run on the field and be able to enjoy that moment. And that's something that was very special, because I had always saw that in baseball, watching on television. They don't allow you to run on the field anymore. But the fans came on and, you know, they just literally just tore up the field, which was great, because they deserved it. And it was a special moment to be able to clinch at home, and knowing that we had done something great for our fans, because our fans were great. They were there for us, you know, throughout that 83 when I came up, and 84 and 85, and you know, they were there, and then in 86 we finally get over the hump. But you know what a lot of people don't give credit to? They don't give a lot of credit to David Johnson, our manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David Johnson stabilized that team. Those teams were his team, and he was a great manager for us. He was the perfect manager for us.
You saw him recently, right?
I did. I went down to see
him. He's having some health issues. You went down to see him?
He's having some health issues. He's getting older. He's 82 years old. You know, people are saying, what's wrong? Well, something's going to happen to all of us. You know, I just had a massive heart attack, you know, almost a year ago. So things are going to happen, and you realize that. But, you know, you go see people that you love and you care for and you remember and you thank them. And just like coming here today, I saw Bobby Valentine. I had to thank him because he was my third base coach when I was a rookie in 83. Most people don't even know that. And that's where my high five began, with Bobby Valentine, when I was coming around hitting home runs. And I was just telling him thank you for all that he had done for me to help me get to be the player. Because, see, it takes the coaches and everybody else help you to become the player that you need to become. And I had a lot of good ones. And, like, you know, Bobby and Buddy, and Buddy Harrelson, and just so many people like Jim Fry. Had it not been for these people, I would have never became the player that I became.
Now, you weren't too happy with Davey when he took you out of Game 7 of the World Series. And then, or actually Game 6. It was actually the Mookie Wilson game. The Game 6, he took you out, right? It looks like it was over. You're out. You weren't happy. Then you hit the home run in Game 7, and you Cadillac it around the bases. And that was kind of the little message to Davey, right?
No, well, you know, Davey was great. You know, I mean, Davey was great for us. We all battled. You know,
got
into
well,
it.
That was part of the team.
But, you know, it wasn't anything personal.
Right.
I think
right.
a lot of times people think they take things personal when it goes with you and the manager or you or another player. Like, when me and Keith got into a fight in spring training, it wasn't anything personal. The next day, we were hugging and kissing, making up. It's just part of being together, you know, and knowing what you have. And that was the difference in us, you know, no regardless of what people say and outsiders will say. But inside the house, which is who we are as players, we stuck together. And that's why we were so good. That's why we were so successful as a team, because we didn't point fingers at each other. We came together when we needed to come together.
Darryl, unfortunately, we're out of time here. Show's about to wrap up. They're going to hit the close music anytime, so I don't want to get in the middle of an answer. But I got to tell you, you got to read this, Joe, before we say goodbye. For me, it is an honor to have you on and be able to talk to you here. I love seeing you out here looking good, looking healthy. You got your number 18 there forever. Love seeing you here as part of the Mets organization and being down at spring training. So best of luck with your health. We appreciate the time you're stopping by.
Thanks, Sal. Good to see you, brother.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing. Joe?
Bro, you know I love you, bro.
Love you too, man.
God bless you.